Best Scoops is proudly produced by News Scoop.
Good day to you and welcome to Biz Scoops for business news, local and international. I'm Barry Murray. On today's show, we reflect on this afternoon's budget speech. The economist Valdo Krichel also shares his impression of the budget presented this afternoon. In international business news, global uncertainty has reached record levels. In investment news, we talk about the potential of blockchain technology. And we talk to the chief executive officer and co-founder of the company Emeco Holdings, Kevin Wachtel. He talks about the challenges of doing business in Africa and how it can be overcome by means of collaboration and partnership.
A look now at local business news.
The Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana, delivered his budget speech this afternoon. He opened his speech saying that South Africa has reached a crucial turning point in managing its public finances. He acknowledged the lasting damage caused by state capture and credit ratings downgrades. He then emphasized the government's commitment to a focused reform agenda and strict fiscal discipline. The strategy centers on stabilizing debt, investing in infrastructure, and improving spending efficiency. According to the minister, these measures are now beginning to produce measurable and positive results for the country's economy.
The world has taken notice. South Africa has been removed from the FATF grey list. We secured our first credit rating upgrade in 16 years, and borrowing costs have eased, creating space for growth and development. These are signals of restored credibility, of renewed resilience, and of a nation regaining its foot. The lesson is a simple but powerful one. Steady structural reform and responsible public finances are the bedrock of a prosperous and more inclusive South Africa.
There was measured relief for taxpayers in this year's budget as stronger than expected collections boosted state coffers. Gross tax revenue has been revised up and personal income tax brackets and rebates will be adjusted in line with inflation. The annual cap on retirement fund tax deductions increased and small businesses will benefit with the compulsory VAT registration threshold rising to 2.3 million rand. However, the budget includes increases in so-called sin tax on alcohol and tobacco, and the general fuel levy will also rise by 9 cents per litre for petrol and 8 cents per litre for diesel. And in conclusion, one thing everyone focused on before today's speech was spending on infrastructure and the ailing municipalities. The finance minister says local government is where citizens interact most directly with the state, yet nearly two-thirds of municipalities are in financial distress and unable to deliver services effectively. The minister called for more targeted intervention strategy and announced that the government will conduct a comprehensive review of local government fiscal framework to address the crisis. We now have the President of the Economic Society of South Africa, Professor Valdo Krichel, on the line with us. Valdo, what is your impression of this afternoon's budget speech?
After last year's excitement, I'll take a boring budget any day. There are a lot of interesting details in the budget, but the question we should ask is whether the Minister of Finance convinced us that he's sticking to his fiscal consolidation plans. The parts that held firm were, for example, the growth projections for 2026-28 that are identical to the MTBBS. Consolidated expenditure is also broadly maintained and debt stabilizes in 25-26, but declines thereafter as promised. The deficit also narrows as planned, reaching 3.1% by 2028-29. TARS savings have actually expanded, 12 billion rands versus the 6.7 billion announced in the MTBBS. There are a couple of things that shifted, however. Revenue projections is lower over the medium term because the 20 billion rand tax increase was withdrawn. The minister frames this as an affordable plan given the in-year revenue outperformance, but it does narrow the fiscal space. The debt-to-GDP peak is 1 percentage point higher. It's 78.9% versus the projected 77.9%. This is partially deliberate in terms of a pre-funding strategy and also partially due to weaker nominal GDP growth. The primary surplus path is also slightly weaker in the outer years, 2.3% versus the 2.5% that was planned. Bond issuance in 2025-26 is materially higher. The Treasury issued more debt than planned, because it was a sensible risk management strategy ahead of the large 2027-28 redemptions, but it does inflate the near-term debt stock. The debt-to-GDP decline occurs as promised, but it is shallower than the MTBPS trajectory, with a 2028-29 level 1.8 percentage points higher than the MTBPS initially projected. I think the bottom line is that the fiscal framework is broadly consistent with the MTBPS, but with some meaningful slippage on the debt trajectory and the revenue outlook. The minister has made a conscious trade-off to withdraw a politically difficult tax increase in exchange for a somewhat slower debt reduction path. The TAR savings partially compensate for this, but it doesn't bridge the gap fully. The pre-funding strategy, with higher issuance in 2025-26, is prudent, but it comes at the cost of higher near-term debt. We can thus be cautiously convinced that the minister is sticking to his broad plans. The direction is right, but the pace of fiscal consolidation has modestly softened.
Thanks very much, Professor Waldo Krechel, President of the Economic Society of South Africa. He's also an economics associate at the Northwest University's Business School. If you'd like to hear more from Prof. Krechel, you can listen to his daily podcast called The Economic Minute on Spotify or Anchor FM.
Time now to take a look at your international business news.
Global uncertainty has reached record levels, with the World Uncertainty Index climbing to an all-time high in the third quarter of last year. Although it eased slightly in the final quarter, it remains far above historical averages. Analysts attribute the surge to escalating geopolitical tensions, trade disputes, rising debt levels, and rapid advances in artificial intelligence. The Center for Risk Analysis says in its latest risk report that despite the uncertainty, major stock markets remain positive, supported by liquidity and optimism around technology. However, rising gold and oil prices and a weaker dollar suggest investors are heading against potential global stocks.
Coming up next, our investment segment delves into the world of finance and wealth building.
Today, we focus on the potential of blockchain and are now joined by the Chief Commercial Officer of the company Damisa, Thomas Pinter. Thomas, with the financial sector increasingly moving on-chain, how does Damisa position itself in the market to capitalize on blockchain's potential for transforming the $130 trillion-plus dollar FX industry?
So our main focus is not the classic markets, like, you know, the trades from US to Europe to the UK. We really focus on the non-G10 countries because we see a lot of issues and challenges in those markets. So one of the key markets we are focusing on is obviously Africa. We're in the process of getting our licensing across Africa. So South Africa is a very interesting market where we want to get licensed in the next year. Also, Nigeria, Ghana, those are the main areas we are focusing on at the moment.
Before we say goodbye, we talk to the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of the company Emiko Holdings, Kevin Wachful. He tells us more about his company and challenges of doing business in Africa, but that can also be overcome by means of collaboration and partnership. Kevin, can you tell us about the founding story of Emiko Holdings and what inspired you to venture into mining and construction in Central Africa?
It was during COVID. What happened is that I was in Cape Town and I had a business here, but it was a completely different business in the food industry. And then when COVID hit, I lost everything. I had to close down that business. So I closed down that business and then I moved to Joburg. And when I moved to Joburg, I had to basically start something fresh. And I had this new vision of entering the construction, agriculture and mining sector. And eventually that's what I did. So I started an amazing venture with another co-founder, Tiffany Smith. We started...
What are the main challenges Emiko Holdings faces in the resource extraction and agriculture sectors, and how do you address them?
Especially in Central Africa and the DRC, it's lack of infrastructure in terms of moving goods or biomass to point B, to where we're going to transform the biomass into bio-based products to our factories, because like you would find yourself losing 50% of your harvest on the way to the factory. So that's a big challenge that we faced. Also just lack of also support, like in terms of, you know, financing and investments.
Emiko Holdings emphasizes collaboration. Can you share examples of successful partnerships and how these relationships have contributed to the company's growth?
We did a really good collaboration with people from Malaysia and UK and Cyprus. And from that, we basically managed to have a strategic partnership that we got to set up with them 100% like in the DRC Congo, and that allowed us to generate some capital as well to be able to cover up some expenses and in production and distribution and everything.
And that was the chief executive officer and co-founder of the company Emiko Holdings, Kevin Wachful. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back next week with more business news, local and international, on BizScoops. I'm Barry Murray. Goodbye.
And this was another edition of BizScoops, proudly produced by News Scoop.